welcome to Backloggery Game Club Podcast number 2, live from MagFest 2013. And I'm joined here by
Triforce,
Korvac,
Sobo the Bear.
And this month we'll be talking about Eve's Origin, which is available on Steam. So, what is your guys' experience with the game itself, or the series?
My experience with the series, I actually had never played an Eve game until like almost this time last year. Actually, I mean it's still been less than a year. I got a box of Doom from Backloggery member Mimi, which included a PSP and some like 7 games. And Ys Oath and Fel'Ghana and Ys 7 was among them. I really loved Oath and Fel'Ghana, and so I was like, okay, you know, this Ys 1 and 2 didn't really look like my kind of thing, but I'll give it a try anyhow, because I'm interested in the series now. So I got Ys 1 and 2. Honestly, that's kind of obtuse and difficult and weird to figure out, and I didn't really care for it all that much. And then sometime this summer I played E7, and that was also really good. So, I definitely want to play Ys Origin. I was excited to see what it was like to play that engine, which is obviously kind of scaled down for PSP, and to see what it's like on the PC, and it's really nice. So this was my first playthrough of the game.
It should be noted that there are a total of 3 different characters you can play the game as. The third one is an unlockable. You have to finish one of the stories to unlock the claw. How about you, Korvac? What's your experience with the series?
Just light tried, and I didn't really play it much until PSP. Mm. I loved Oath, and I loved E7, and 1 and 2 Chronicles was interesting, but I didn't find it as
a different gameplay.
Yeah, it's a bit different. It's maybe a little more dated, but it was interesting to see where the series began.
And Sobo?
Sobo.
Yes. I've been trying very hard since we've been here to say Sobo instead of Sobo.
Yeah, I'm not. It's like Tweeter says, I'm not the little ghost you get Chrysogram from in Symphony of the Night. I'm not a shmoo or a shmooboo. It's Bo, like, oh, Sobo? Like, you're going to shoot me with an arrow, you know?
Sobo?
Yeah,
Bo. What were your thoughts, Bo?
Well. back when I was a contributor to Snack Bar Games, I got review copies of both Oath and Fel'Ghana and 1 and 2 Chronicles digitally, and loved the hell out of Oath and Fel'Ghana. That was like hack and slash love. Chronicles was different, and I don't think I got to that until after I played the Turbo Duo copy on Virtual Console first. Which I enjoyed that one despite how old it was, just because it was simple, it was clean cut, and it was fun up until you got the Temple of Dharma in 2, and then it became a navigation nightmare, and I hated it. 1 and 2 on the PSP was beautiful, and it had that same element, but once again, the temple design and the lack of lighting and the tinier screen, it made navigation just as much of a pain in the tuchus. So I don't like those as much, but I do love 1. Then I got the Steam versions of Oath and Fel'Ghana and Origins, and I have a copy of Wanderers from the East Super Nintendo copy on my shelf waiting for me at home. And this is my first time playing Origins as Unica, and I loved it, minus a few points in which I ranted about on Twitter. As I'm sure you gentlemen are aware.
I played Ys, the first one on the Sega Master System when it came out. I was probably 12 years old. That version only included the first game. And after that, I didn't play anything until Book 1 and 2 came out on the Virtual Console. And then after I played that, then everything else just I played in a flood. Actually, I even played Origin before it was released in the U.S. I downloaded a translation patch that ended up getting purchased by Xseed and then becoming the official translation
for it. So wait, did you actually import the PC copy and then
The PC version was available by this one site called Groupon,
yep.
Where you could... Groupon, you can...
Don't mind the random hooting, this is Magfest.
But Groupon had a version of it for really cheap, and then it was... The translation patch came out shortly after. So I wanted to try it, and then I ended up buying it on Steam anyways when it came out. And I played through it... The first time with Unica, then I played it with Hugo, and then this time for the Game Club, I played it with the Claw. Which, it should be known that both of those stories, all three stories kind of follow the same path. Hugo and Unica being very similar, but like their gameplay style is really different. And the Claw is kind of from the bad guy's point of view and is considered the real story of how actually everything happened, and it gives you the final ending, like the true ending to it.
So that, like, so it's kind of like, I mean, so we got the gist of the story, but canonically what happened in the story you played for this, which was the third one.
Right.
Canonically, that's what really happened.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what what continues on until the other ones. So what did you guys think of it? Did you like it?
I liked it quite a bit. I mean, Oath and Felghana, I think we all agreed was probably the best one, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's definitely the best.
So, I mean,
the best in the series.
It's using that engine.
Yeah.
It's using that engine. I feel like E7, you know, there were some nice things about that engine, but I feel like Oath and Felghana's engine fit most with what I liked in the series. I think it gameplay wise expressed that best.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really neat to see that, you know, in 1080p at a reliable 60 frames a second, you know, I mean, that's just kind of, you know, mind blowing really. I mean, so it was, I don't think it was better than Oath and Felghana. It's limited to the... what's it called? Darm Tower?
Darm Tower, yeah.
Limited to the tower. I assume all the stories are that way? All three?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, I kind of missed having some outdoor environments and things, but they do a good job of adding enough variety. And I felt like the boss fights, I mean, to be honest, I don't really remember the boss fights in the series all that well, but I feel like it might have had the best boss fights in the series. I felt like, for the most part, they were all really strong.
Yeah, some returning from the...
I was actually kind of impressed with myself that I recognized, I think, I don't know how you say his name, this thing is like Gelati or something like that.
Gelati.
Is that
In 2, Mantis. When you're inside the fire area, he's just the head that spits out that giant, like, snake full of worms.
In
Origin, he's actually the full-on, like, fleshy golem with the arms that you gotta whack. He's got cogs on him to break them off.
Mm.
Safe point right outside is called the Constructs Chamber.
Yeah.
It's called, like, the Monstrous Construct or something like that.
He's
some sort of, like, I mean, monster that I guess was created by...
Something. He's got like a golem vibe to him.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to see like where just a giant evil random gooey head came from 700 years prior when he's like got the rest of the body.
Yeah.
So,
and that head, by the way, I'm pretty convinced is, I don't know what it looks like in the other versions, but in the PSP version of Ys 2, I thought that was like the grossest sprite I've ever seen in all of gaming. He is nasty.
It was pretty rancid, but I think that added to the appeal.
I mean, like I said, I was proud of myself for like noticing and making the connection, it's because that sprite was so gross that made a impact on me.
There was some other returning bosses, though. The Praying Mantis was one.
I thought and so, then, but I couldn't remember what the old one looked like or which game it came from.
And I can't remember what her name was.
He was near the top of the tower in one, which he was really simple in that one compared to the...
Near the top?
Yeah.
Okay, like, well, like, he was near the end of this one, too.
It's like, it's representative. Like, near the beginning of the tower, you fight, like, the bat, the evil wizard chick. She summons that bat. You remember in halfway through one, the really, really annoying bat that would do the Dracula teleporting? Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're the exact same one.
That boss was a joke in Origin.
Yeah. Or, like, in the little side room with the impossible architecture, the teleporting wizard. He's the very first boss in one. Yeah.
Oh, in the Raidos Annex.
Yeah. In Raidos Annex and Origins, that teleporting wizard.
Okay.
He's the very first boss in East 1.
That was a cool boss, too. Like, I thought all the bosses were really good.
Yeah. Storyline, I didn't think was... It's not too much to the storyline.
Yeah, I mean, I don't play Ease for the storyline. Like, the fact that it was an origin story of Ease, like, I didn't care about that. I just wanted to, like, hack and slash and get some experience points.
Yeah. I felt story-wise that there was a lot of things that might not connect to 1 and 2. I mean, I was expecting, like, maybe an origin story of how the demons took over Solomon's Shrine. I mean, Ease is, like, prosperous in this. And then, I feel like, everything is ruined in 1 and 2. Everything that they did in this, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, it's also, like, from the perspective, they suddenly, like, get, oh, crap, demons are suddenly appearing because of the plot and all the connections. So you're not really... the character's point of view is really, it's limited third person. You're only seeing so far as, like, what's immediately going on at that crucial moment that causes all the chain of events that stabilizes the world for 1 and 2. You know, it's like, you see, like, the Black Pearl. You see why the goddesses were statues. You see where the big bad of 1 and 2 even comes from.
Right.
But, there could have been more to it, like Tri said earlier, like having outside, you know, areas, a little bit more variety with that.
To see more of what's happening elsewhere.
Yeah, but I mean,
as a result.
But the only thing you really see is that the whole land is just
lava. You see the tree, and that the rest of the island is completely trashed. Which it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
We still yearn for it, but the level design that goes with the story, all the different how different Darm Tower is in Origins compared to 1. More than makes up for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they cover every single...
element,
lack
of a better phrase, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, and it definitely lacked that... besides, like, a couple of, like, little backtracking parts, you pretty much are moving up the whole tower, like, straight away.
Mm.
Without having to stop and do... The only part I really got stuck on, I think, on the is the with the sound, the what is it?
Oh,
the
demon thing that made that sound.
The like the devil's passage or something.
Yeah. What got me stuck on that? And this was one thing that I thought was kind of mean about the game. Like those roos, like talking to them, they're. For the people that haven't played the game, they're like these little creatures that are supposedly demons, but they're friendly animals. They help you if you give them rotifruit.
Right.
And, like, at first they look kind of optional, and sometimes they are, but sometimes they're required. And, like, a rotifruit could be in a treasure chest anywhere. And, like, at that point in the game, I hadn't found the last rotifruit. And I had no idea where to go, so... I mean, I was kind of in a rush to beat it because I was trying to do this all in the day before coming to MAGFest. So I'm like, I don't got time to look for this fruit, so I end up looking up on GameFAQs. I don't remember where it was at this point, but like, I think that was the only time where I really didn't find an item that I needed. But But yeah, so I mean, like, it's right there. You're forced to lose health and go to the other end of that chamber. Right.
And you lose health fast enough.
Really fast in that chamber, yeah.
That you could think that you're not going the right way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's because you have to go out there and then you give the rotifer and then you can actually replenish your and make it the rest of the way.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of weird, but. But, I mean, you know, for the most part, there wasn't, like... And I thought it had some clever gameplay things, like, to like, help you understand what to do. Like, I can't think of any example where I've seen it where, you know, the typical defeat all the enemies and move on thing. Mm-hmm. They're represented by flashing red enemies. It's like...
So you know...
It's really obvious of what you have to do.
Right, right. Is essentially known mainly for its soundtrack, like even more so, like, I think more so than any aspect of the gameplay. Like, it's pretty much about the soundtrack.
What do you think, Corbett?
You have it just cranked up and
yeah. I thought it was great.
Yeah, it was.
I think there are a few of the previous games that I thought were better.
But... Yeah.
I mean,
Oath.
Oath's soundtrack is the best one.
Yeah, because there's enough variety in it.
Yeah. And I think 1 and 2 soundtracks are also strong. But, like, overall, the series soundtracks haven't become something that I'm personally, like, totally obsessive about or anything. I like them a lot. I like them a lot.
Harumphs.
I like them a lot. Don't get me wrong here. You know, I mean, it's not too many of the tracks have, like, stayed with me. Like, I've got, you know, the disc that has selections from 1 and 2 on...
They came with it, right?
They came with it. I've got them in my music selections. And when it comes up on random, I'm like, I know this. I've heard this. I played this recently. What was this? And then I look at the screen and it says, "He's 1 and 2 Chronicles." I'm like, oh, yeah. So, I mean, it's like... You know, I like it. I enjoy it. You know, it's kind of a little sometimes it's kind of just random.
It's very butt.
But like some stuff's really memorable, and like I know there were some remixes from 1 and 2.
Yeah.
And like when I recognize those, I'm like, oh yeah. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure, like, the music, like, as soon as you start to explore the tower from the first floor, like, I feel really sure that music came from 1 or 2.
It had to have.
Because it sounded really familiar to me.
Oh,
it was.
Bum, bum, bum,
it,
bum.
Yeah.
Bum. That's the main Darm
Tower. Like, yeah. I was like, yeah, this is good.
Because
they used a lot of 1 and 2's music just to continue with the theme of connection between Origins and the first and second game.
The like the harmonica stuff.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good tune. Yeah. And didn't they use that in, am I wrong, in the they used that in, or was it a different tune in Trails in the Sky? Joshua has a harmonica he plays a little too.
Yeah, I think that they just like the idea of...
Yeah, but it sounds... Or maybe it's like there's some Falcon... I don't know.
There's this crazy timeline that people worked out about how...
Oh, yeah, is
Is
connected to the Legend of Heroes series?
It's not connected. They had one crossover game, so that makes it...
But, like, Legend... Like, I thought that was, like, officially true, though. Like,
no, try. It's the fans.
Yeah. The fans worked out this way that all of Falcom's games are connected.
Yeah, there's...
Okay. I thought that was...
That timeline.
Yeah, I thought that was considered canonical. Like, I didn't know. Like, I'm not like, deep into the Falcom fandom or anything, so, I just took it at face value.
I remember when XSEED was localizing Trails, they put out this... They'd drawn up on a whiteboard of the Legend of Heroes games.
Mm-hmm. And
they drew all these connections.
Games. Oh! So this is XSEED's fault.
Well, yeah, but it didn't have any...
The fans have done it, too, and included even more of Falcom's games.
Yeah, okay.
Like, this from XSEED, it was literally just, like, the Legend of the Heroes. Like, everything from, like, Legend of the family game, the Drawls family. From that game to Faxanadu, all the way up to Trails in the Sky, because those, according to them, that was, like, it might have just been, like, chronology of the games, not still interconnected, but, like, that was the tree. The fans,
it was largely just showing all of the games that are in the Legend of Heroes series, not specifically connected as in storyliners or which ones are sequels.
Yeah, just like a chart, like these are all the games. But fans, like they did with the Zelda timelines for ages until Miyamoto and them were like, all right, here, have a book. they'll find the smallest thing. You're like, oh, it's clearly, epileptic trees of various, like, oh, what if that's gotta be, it's like saying, like, somehow, like, the Tales of series is connected inherently to all these different universes and it's canon together just because Darth Vader and Kratos are fighting alongside Sopatia, because clearly the Empire is out to get, the Greek gods, because they're in the same universe, right? Obviously.
Did we really have to go into the Soul Calibur 4 canon?
It was just a good example, to how crazy the fans might get when they're trying to interconnect everything. But it's still cool that they're going to go that far and actually give love to a series like that. And then even within the Yeast series alone, how all of those are interconnected. And drastically, but so simplistically. Adol the Sound Dude, he wants adventure, he finds adventure, kicks some ass, saves the woman and the world. And except for Origins, which is just, this is why he was able to kick ass the first time.
Right.
Mm.
Did it seem off to you that he wasn't in the game at all?
Well, he is.
Well, I mean, he's unlockable.
He's in there to play around with.
Yeah.
Not really. Because Unica played so much like him and it was like...
I'm talking about just like storyline-wise, though.
Oh.
I mean, there's nothing that it has to do with him in it.
Yeah.
And it's the only Yeast game.
It's the first time he hasn't been in an Yeast game.
I mean, he's unlockable. You can do the
Is there
boss
no
rush.
Story in his mode?
But I don't think there's a story...
He's just like boss rush.
He's just like for the boss rush and the time attack, and he's like adapted from Ark of Naptipshim.
Yeah,
the sixth one. He's just like the bonus character because it takes place 700 years before his first adventure in one and two. So it's just like, oh look, we can't have a game without Adol. That's not. It's like having a Zelda game without Link. It just doesn't happen.
Well, I feel like when I first started playing the series, I kind of felt like Adol was kind of essential he's just this guy that goes around with a sword doing crap, but
the rest of the games it's his story.
I liked the idea of Adol's character, even though there's not like a lot to go on with him or anything like that. I just like the idea of, he's just an adventurer, man. He goes around, saving the world.
Do you really need more than that?
I know,
Adol's
a good guy. Yeah. So, but I think when I played E7, it made me realize one of the stronger points of that game was the party system, I felt.
Yeah.
And it made, I actually, once I sort of settled into some of the other characters, I didn't use Adol a whole lot. He was always in the party. But I actually, ended up using the ranged characters in that game more. So at first I thought this is going to feel weird. I'm not controlling Adol, but then it's like, you know what? These other characters actually fit into it as well, and I felt like the same principle applied to Origin, even without the party system.
Yeah, believe it or not, Origins actually is a pretty old game.
2005, right?
Or 2006 it came out.
Yeah.
Is that before Oath and Felghana?
Oath and Felghana actually came out after.
Oh, okay.
So maybe they were...
So we're actually all wrong. The Oath and Felghana is using the Origin engine.
Mm.
Which is actually using the Ark of Napishtim.
PS2.
Yeah.
Which is 6.
Yeah, I've not been able to play that one.
No.
Yeah,
that's only... Yeah, there's a PS2 version and a really, really bad PSP version.
It's a warning to everyone who's listening. If you're going to go for Napishtim, the 6th one, for lack of a better way to say the name, don't go for the PSP one because it's no joke, absolutely atrocious.
You have it?
No.
Would you play it?
I was going to pick it up because it seemed like it'd be easier to get so I could actually enjoy it, but I've heard stuff like terrible load times and just taking a console game and trying to squish it onto the PSP. They did a terrible job.
They've done a surprisingly admirable job of squeezing that engine onto the PSP. Otherwise, but it kind of ends up being like a blurry mess. Like, I felt like Trails in the Sky uses the same engine. I felt Trails in the Sky was kind of ugly.
Yeah. Last year there was a Japanese Groupon deal for
Trails in the Sky?
For E6.
Oh, really?
But and there is a fan translation out there, but I couldn't get it to work.
I wonder if it's because the Konami actually hired the fan community to do the translation for 6.
Konami?
Yeah, Konami published 6 in the US.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the reason the PSP version is so bad is because Konami did the port themselves.
Oh.
And
they kind of botched the job, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Velocom did the other.
There have been quite a few East games from different publishers that haven't quite been up to the standard that we've gotten from Xseed on PSP.
Yeah. And, you know, it's the history of the series in the U.S. is interesting because it's had so many false starts, I guess. I mean, the Master System version, I think, was the first version to come out here. And then Book 1 and 2 came out and did all right. A lot of people said it got great reviews, especially because of the CD medium at the time. And then 3 just didn't go anywhere.
No. It's well, the same way, like, if you think about, like, Legend of Zelda, the first one, it's like, oh, people like us, they got a good start. And then you got, like, Zelda 2 and then East 3, which it's like, they completely shifted to 2D side-scrolling.
Yeah, which...
But where Zelda 2 is, like, love it or hate it with, depending on your person, but it's still a solid game, East 3 just felt it, from what I've seen thus far, it didn't work well. Because Adol feel like you need to have him like third person or top down.
Yeah.
With the way the combat works. The hack and slash doesn't work like a beat 'em up.
I think that's why Felghana was so successful switching to an isometric view.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, after 3 came out, they actually went back to the overhead bumping system until 6. No, 5 actually had you hit the button to attack.
All the variations of 4 had the bump system?
Yes. Yeah, and then 5 only came out on the Super Famicom.
Now, I think it's interesting how the series, like, Falcom seems to be, like, a PC developer, I guess?
Yeah.
Like,
seriously.
I mean, the games are kind of made PC first and then squeezed down onto portables or other systems.
Yeah, in Japan, their games are primarily PC.
I mean, even from Ease 1, I believe those were originally developed for some computer system.
PC 88 or something.
Yeah,
and then, you know, MSX. Released on Master System and other systems like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of a weird thing for Japan, but, I mean, I guess Falcom's kind of found their niche, I'm sure they sell more copies these days on the portable systems than they do on the PC versions. Maybe.
I don't know. I think with the Steam sales, I think they're doing
well,
that.
Just in the U.S. anyway.
Okay.
In the U.S. anyway, so, I mean, Steam,
I don't know.
I hope that's working out for XSEED, because I would love to see them release more PC games.
Based on what I've heard, I'm pretty sure it is working out quite well for them.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, just, that's exciting, because, I mean,
just
they...
Just compared to, like, what other developers have said, their numbers have been on Steam after getting into a sale like that.
I think several of the Legend of Heroes games, including direct sequels to Trails in the Sky, run on that engine, too.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised it took this long for XSEED to move to PC.
I mean, it's a perfect...
Considering Steam.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's a perfect solution for them, because, the, I mean, their main barrier, I mean, as an outside observer, is getting their stuff stocked at retail.
Right.
No one wants to stock it, and, I mean, they ship... So, I mean, it's just... I mean, distribution is such a problem with these niche games... And it's not a problem with Steam.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's also, like, relevant to how the different regions work. I mean, the PSP is still going strong in Japan. They love their RPGs. They love their PSP. Over here, the PSP's been dead for a while. The Vita is, as far as I know, it's floundering, especially in contrast to the 3DS. Because I haven't seen a single Vita here, but I've seen 3DSs in every single person's hand.
Well, no one.
There's no real reason.
There's no reason, though, because, I mean, it's Street Pass.
Oh, yeah, but you know what I mean. I mean, you guys got a Street Pass, but, I mean, it's like, if you consider that and, like, the physical copies and how people aren't even looking towards that anymore, it's like trying to bring, like, the other established games they already have out and just translating them and bringing them back. It's just not going to work. Because you got a more niche audience than just people who want, like, a small indie game released on Steam. Those have better chances. But people still want the games, which is why I think the Yeast games on Steam thus far, I mean, you got Steam, you got Steam sales, and you got games people want.
Yeah.
That's a match made in heaven. Just look at Carpe Fulgur and what happened with Reseteer. You know, and all the dosh they made just by, oh, look, we're on Steam now, and then boom, you know, 40,000 sales in the first month. Minimum. So I want to see more Falcom games put up on Steam, even 1 and 2 Chronicles, because why not?
Yeah.
I mean, I am a fan of buying physical games, but I would prefer getting it on Steam to not getting it at all.
Amen to that.
Hopefully this is working out enough for them, because there's a PC version of Trails in the Sky, the first one. They can just stick that translation in there, release it, see how it sells. I mean, it's got to be easy enough.
I mean, the main barrier with Trails in the Sky, getting off topic, but I mean, the main barrier with that is it's so much work, and they could probably release 5 or 6 games for the amount of work to put into one game for that.
Yeah.
It's just so much, but many words.
They had the translation done for the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying the barrier to gain more of them. But, I mean, that should be easy. And I thought one of the interesting things to me, I mean, Ease Origin, we're talking about a 6-year-old game, at least, you know, I just think it's interesting that Falcom was so cooperative with XSEED over it, because, I mean, I don't really know how the industry works, but it just seems to me that, because I know XSEED relies on the original developer to implement their translations, and I just think it's really cool that Falcom was able to, well, it was like, okay, yeah, we'll dig up this 6-year-old game and put in your translation. Like, I mean, that seems like, I don't know, I just have
a
hard time.
The translation was already done. They just bought it from.
Yeah.
But I mean, I just think it's, I mean, they had to implement, they probably had to change some settings and change some of the video output options. I mean, it's just, I mean, there had to have been some degree of work on Falcom's part on this, and it just seems like, to me, I just have a hard time imagining a developer wanting to drag out that old code and work on it again.
Right. And you mentioned something the other day about how they re-rendered the ending of the ending movie.
Yeah, it's clearly compressed video, but it's got XSEED localization credits in English running on it, which I rarely see something that's already been rendered for a game that was released a long time ago. I never see a rendered scene re-rendered. Yeah. I've never noticed it. And it was very noticeable here. So they went and re-rendered an old FMV to put English text on top.
Right. Instead of just having it, you know, play the credits normally and then having, like, maybe another screen.
Yeah. And that happens a lot.
Yeah. Where it's just, like...
Just having, like, a split screen or just having, like, an overlay or something, you know?
And this wasn't an overlay. These credits were clearly part of the compressed video.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, they weren't... It wasn't a separate render. It was all just continuous part of the ending. So, I mean, clearly Falcom did some work here.
going for that floor pizza.
I'm going to explain briefly. Try tried to shove a medium-sized Domino's pizza into his fridge. It fell onto the base of the fridge. They considered it floor pizza by that account.
What does that have to do with Kid Icarus?
You find food on the floor.
You find food on the floor. You play it, right?
Yeah.
And one of the more well-known lines is, well, they keep, like, poking fun at Pitt for, like, eating food off the floor and stuff. And Pitt's like, floor ice cream gives you health!
Simon Belmont does it.
He gets it out of the walls, but he's got to worry about brick and mortar on top of that. This is not bad. It's old and potentially stale, but food is food, man. So, hey, food cures your hunger.
I wanted to mention way back when we were talking about the story, the funniest thing to me about the whole story was I have never seen gods or goddesses portrayed in the way they were in this game. Like, they're just like best buds with everyone, you know?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's no, it's like, the goddesses went missing. I mean, it's more like a princess search than a goddess search. Like, the beginning of the story is this search team, at least on Unica's story, I don't know how it might open on the other characters, but on Unica's story, it starts with this search team coming down from the floating island that you're on in Ys 2, and...
Which is the island, the floating continent of Ys.
Right. And they're coming down, and they're like, because the goddesses ran off and without telling anyone. Maybe they're in danger. The goddesses can die. And so they go down and they're like, they're looking for the goddesses because it's like, you know, it's like the goddesses might not know what they're doing, you know? I mean, they could be in danger. Like, what are they doing? We got to help them. Maybe we got to knock some sense into them. Why did they do this?
That's actually addressed in the third storyline.
Oh?
About how he actually calls them out for... kind of like being reckless and screwing around, and
mm-hmm.
like about how because they're even though they're gods, they are still capable of making mistakes.
Mm. But it's so funny to me because everyone's like all buddy buddy with them, and they're like Unica is like they're like her best friends, and she's like their best friend. They like hang out and stuff.
Yeah.
It's like
they have
wings, but otherwise, I guess they live forever, but they can probably die, but they like don't age, I guess. So, I mean, it's really funny to me. Like, there's just such a casual relationship with these goddesses. I've never seen anything like it before. I just thought it was funny and kind of neat.
It was charming, and it helped bring out Yuniko's character to a degree where you can understand, like, where her motivation, her emotion came from. Like, since from a young age, she's, like, idolized them. She's become, like, the secret little sister that would sneak off and see them because, oh, they're goddesses, you know, blah, 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 gotta protect them, gotta hide them or whatever. And it becomes her motivation for actually getting down there and being pretty much Adol with a battle axe and kicking ass to try and save, like, her big sisters. Because, oh, my God, gotta save them. And then she outshines everyone else because you're the player character, so of course you're the badass, even though you're a rookie, like, 18-year-old girl with a wood hatchet at first.
and, like, during that part where, most of the, like, people in the party who can actually fight get petrified.
Right.
Like, which one is it? Is it, I don't know how to say her name. Rhea? Let's see. She's the one. Fina's the one that's captured, right?
Yeah.
So, like, Fina's like, I don't know if there's anything we can do. Like, maybe? I mean, it'd take, like, a lot of power. It'd have to be, like, really concentrated. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you can find something, bring it to me. I'll think about it. Maybe it'll work. Like, she has to, like, think about things. It's not, like, just off the top of her head. I mean, it's just, it's so unmystical. It's, like, it's just kind of neat.
Yeah, it gives them an element that they're not omnipotent. Even the gods can fail.
But it makes me wonder what, like, I don't, like, what is the origin of V's origin? Like, I don't know the... I don't know... I don't know the E story well enough. Maybe some of you all do. Like, I mean, what? I mean, they're the goddesses? I mean, you could have...
But just of that, like, that continent.
But, I mean...
Do you need a reason to explain why the gods are the gods?
Yeah, I mean, what did
really?
They? What did they do? I mean, what did they do? Did they make E's? Did they?
Let's explain
it.
No,
I think
they
lifted it out of the ground.
Yeah,
I think.
They created the Black Pearl, which is also the source of all magic, and they used the power of the Black Pearl to raise the continent into the sky and to give everyone magic.
They may not have made it, but they made it fly.
Yeah,
but I mean, so did they become the goddesses after the island started flame?
No, they made the pearl that. So they, right. And then they're like, whoop, let's take Zeal.
So they're the goddesses of the E's area of the world.
We don't know their origin.
Well, like,
we don't have origin.
They're just the goddesses.
They're just the goddesses.
So, I mean, you know, the funny thing is, you could have replaced the word goddess with princess, and the story would have basically been the same, other than the fact that, like, I guess they, like, did something to make E's the way it is today.
But goddesses is more epic.
It's
more awesome.
And they're already established characters.
I'm not disputing that they change it. I thought it was funny.
They're diverting a role. They're diverting a stereotype. Because you think the gods are either going to be really, really omnipotent, far off, oh, well, you got to do this or that, and that's it. They're never wrong kind of characters. Or they're just, like, really badass boss fights. Like the God of War series, where your goal is not to get help from them, but kick their ass, or vice versa. They're subverting it. Well, they're just like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm immortal, you know, flying around, gonna make a floating island, you know, oh, crap, look, demons, we're just gonna poof, and then you find Fina later in, what's the little tower's name again?
Raido's Annex.
Raido's Annex, and she's just like, oh, I'm in a, like, nearly indestructible force field sitting right here, just like, whatever. Just gonna sit here, hang out. Oh, look, hey, you wanna go? You got plot tokens to go along? Which, actually, this ties into one of the problems I have with the game. It's how confusing some of, like, the plot progressions are. Like, I had to use a guide halfway through. Mm-hmm. Like, that one part, like, you need to, like, talk to certain people at certain times.
Yeah,
but
that's not new to the E-series.
Oh, it's not new to the E-series, but I'm saying, like, this time it's like...
To get into the door, right?
Yeah, to get into the door to unpetrify the people, or to, like, these different points where it's like, unless you played the prior game and you had a clue, like with the harmonica in the relation to that, or the evil ring and the protection that the House of Toa gives you, with the callbacks, unless you knew that in advance, you were completely lost. Like, how many people knew unless they, like, hammered, like, that, the walkie-talkie, like, shell and had right. references and knowledge of, like, Metal Gear Solid and, like, oh, use this to call for hints. Right. How would they have known, okay, I gotta go here, then back here, then talk to her because she's useless, but they're gonna do magic anyway because Pina's got nothing better to do. She's just chilling there in the impossible architecture, and then you gotta go back up and it's like, oh, look, I can actually kill stuff again. It just, it seemed a little bit convoluted, which is par for the course for you listeners, so don't get discouraged. But I'm glad I had a guide, and after that it was like, oh, this still makes so much sense. But prior to that, it was like, what do I do? You're the goddesses. You're supposed to be goddesses. Tell me.
Right. Speaking of the shell that you used to talk to the lady that gives you helpful hints, well, sort of helpful hints. There were some times
half the time it didn't even get. Yeah. Oh, what are you doing? You
know? I thought just random thing I thought was funny in the text was one of the characters. I don't remember the exact quote, but like it was like instead of phone it in, she was like, let's shell it in. Oh. I thought it was funny.
So you guys think you're going to play through the other storylines?
Yeah.
Definitely, eventually.
My complaining and everything? I have to.
It's funny because all the obscure little things, like progression things, aren't present, especially in the third storyline. Oh, we got somebody.
Uh-oh.
Hello.
Hi.
Bonjour.
Oh, someone was looking for you, Sobo, but I don't remember who now. They were like, I haven't seen Sobo since he did such.
Oh god!
It might have been Carrie. I don't know. Since she's probably leaving early-ish
tomorrow. Yeah.
She's I'm leaving. Sorry.
It's okay. We're wrapping.
Yeah, up. Yeah. He's editing. He's gonna edit this.
Okay.
And besides, maybe having Lynn randomly walk in adds to the MAGFest atmosphere.
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
It totally does. Yeah, random interruptions, guys going out.
We heard that out the. I probably didn't pick up the mics, but we started bursting out laughing when we just heard that out in the hall out there.
Well, I'm glad you guys will play through it again.
Of course.
What'd you guys rate it?
4 out of 5.
I'd probably give it the same.
4?
I can't remember if it was 4 or 5. I'm pretty sure I docked it because I was pissed off at a few pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
you.
Yes.
Angry.
I know.
Games.
I know. Me, angry at games, heaven forbid. It's an impossible thing, of course. Like, some of, like, the mazes, like, in the desert place, I completely missed, like, the first key you gotta get.
Yeah.
Because it's that one chest, you gotta go down and over to the right, it's just sitting there and you can't see it unless
Ooh.
You're on the bottom of it. I completely
right.
missed that for, like, a half hour. Or the water place where I'm like, I got the necklace on, right? Death.
Yeah, the water place.
Yeah.
Did everyone figure out right away?
No.
That you could swim?
No.
I did not.
No. No, that flipped my shit. I was like, okay, she's clearly got gravity because she's sinking and she's not floating. So I'm gonna run around. Okay, I'm lost. Half hour later, I'm just like, button, hit the jump button, and then I hit it again. And I'm like, and then I hit it again, and I'm like, son of a, and I just started swimming around like a motorboat, and then thinking to myself. Either they're a bit cruel for not telling me the controls, or I am just the biggest dumb bear ever.
Yeah. It's,
oh, my
like,
God.
I had no idea where to go, and I was just, like, racking my brain, like, what could they give me to get past this obstacle?
An extra jump. An extra dozen jumps or more, but they don't tell you that. They just make you assume, oh, yeah, you can, you know, swim, I guess. Hit buttons. Which is
yeah.
what we didn't do, because we figured it was some sort of, like, complex solution or part of the level design or something.
Yeah, but, the swimming mechanic actually I thought was kind of cool. Once I knew it was in the game.
Yeah.
Stuttering infinite jumps? Who doesn't love that?
Yeah.
Just learning about it, I would have at least like a prompt. Like, oh, hey, look, you can swim. How do I do that? Press X, press square? No, run around for a half hour and get mad. And think, oh, I gotta like, in order to get to the higher ledges, I eventually decided, all right, I'm gonna like jump and then get hit by the spikes and use the, like, the knockback damage from getting hit by the spikes to try and get up there, and it worked for half of the room. And then I died.
Well, I'm looking at it, it looks like I rated it a 5 out of 5.
Oh.
Surprisingly.
Surprisingly? I mean, you're the resident Ease and Falcom fan.
Yeah, but I think that my third playthrough, I didn't like it as much as I did.
Oh, really?
When I originally rated it.
Oh, really?
So I might change it to a... You know, I usually keep it what I initially do it.
It waffles between,
yeah,
right?
Like a
4.5. It's not completely perfect, but it's not like an 80% quality.
Yeah.
It is not a 100% quality.
We are professional game reviewers. We're able to change what we think of a game at our own whims.
Exactly. At times for me, the game was a 1-star because, you know, honestly, screw those puzzles. Screw that lack of direction. Screw the shell walkie-talkie and how it was useless.
The shell phone. They don't call it phone in the game. But I want to call it shell phone.
Other times, like the boss fights, it was mind-blowing. It was awesome. You know, like having to dodge and try to take down all the little, like, Manuses, the praying Manus, and hopefully he doesn't recover in time. And just, like, the very end, he's got a sliver of life left. I'm nearly dead, and he's about to regenerate half his bar, and I just bomb rush him, and, you know, and he dies, and I'm like, yeah! You know, the stuff like that was great to a contrast where I'm just like, where do I go? I've been running in a circle for a half hour. Help.
So less mazes, more everymanning.
Exactly! More boss fights. Even yucky, ugly heads. I'll take
that was a good fight. I mean, they were all good fights.
They were all good fights. I'm just saying, more of those and less, like, Dharma Temple.
Where do I go?
Yeah, because that's not their strong suit, especially for a silent hero.
Mm. Was there a lot of character fights in Unica's storyline? You fight
There were several. You start off, let's see, the first, you fight Epona, who's
four
that?
Or five of them. You got...
Because it alternates.
Yeah, depending on who
like
you're
they're
playing.
Mini bosses.
Yeah, right. I'm sure Hugo got like the dude of the two, like demon beast, whatever. Yeah, you got to fight Epona first, and then you do the dramatic encounter with the dude who
killed her father.
Yeah, spoilers, but yeah. It's not really spoilers. So you can win that fight and get an achievement, but he otherwise he'll just beat the crap out of you. And you fight like Epona at least once, if not twice more.
I think once more, and it's like, it's in the final area.
Yeah, and then you fight...
She's easy.
Yeah, then you fight the dude.
Who wasn't as hard as I thought.
And then you fight the evil witch, who is actually the second in command in Ys 2.
Oh, really? Now,
I've still got the same problem I always do, where I don't realize a boss fight is intended for you to lose. And I just reset before realizing that it would just continue on the game.
I had a hunch that was a fight not meant to be won, because, like, how is Unica, like, I mean, she's this novice that, I mean, you know, they make it obvious that she's a novice, even though she's running around with an axe and monsters left and right. But, I mean, story-wise, she's a novice. There's no way that this super powerful guy is going to... I mean, there's no way she's going to beat him, or supposed to beat him, that killed her father. They're saving this for later.
I had a feeling right from the start that was an optional
win or forced loss.
It could have been one of those fights where it's designed like you beat the boss and what he's currently offering, but then right after that they brush it off like, oh, that was really like only 1/100th of my life bar. That was a good test, but you're still a weakling. And I tried going after him because I saw the achievements first. I'm like, oh, that must be like an impossible fight. He's pretty strong. Let's try it. And I reset it 5 times and got mad and just lost. And moved on with my life. But the final character boss was the woman from 2, and I thought that fight was really cool.
Yeah.
Because they also fused the final fight from Darm Tower in 1, the two heads that kept teleporting. They put them together. And it was interesting to see how that mechanic worked and how you had to keep going after her and then the heads and then her again.
I had trouble with that fight at first, but once she started, like, taking refuge inside the head,
yeah,
that it was a lot easier and more fun then.
And those heads were in...
Yeah.
Yeah, they were, in East, they were like the final boss of the tower before you got to Dark Fact.
Right.
Like, they were the ones where one of them had the shield and you got had to go whack the other one.
Right.
So, which, just the references in general like that, they were really cool because it's like, I felt better having played 1 and 2 and suffered through so much of the crap those offered. Just to feel like, you know, it's just like you like seeing stuff from previous games and sequels, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You like seeing references, you like seeing, like, returns or origin stories or whatever. Well, here you go, it's a big love letter, you know?
It's a fine balance between original content and familiarity, but familiarity of certain things I definitely think can help make something seem a little better.
If not, at least more tolerable, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's just, well, I mean, it's just that, you know, it's like, I don't know, it's just like you like seeing something you've seen before, like, oh my gosh, you know?
No, that's why sequels work relatively well most of the time.
Yeah.
Even though this was a prequel, but semantics.
Yeah. You're still taking your knowledge of the original sequel kind of way.
Yeah.
All right, well, I think that about wraps us up. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedules.
Harumph.
And we'll see everyone next month with Okami.